Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to the Q Podcast. I'm Gabe Lyons. I'm so glad you've joined us today. We're continuing to learn together, and that's what we love to do at Q. You know, our theme for Q is called Stay Curious, Think Well, Advance Good. And part of why we've talked about those key actions is because we know as Christians that for many times people have skepticism about Christians, whether we really are curious about the world or whether we just care about pushing our point of view. And we just believe at Q that we need to be curious. We need to be learning about the world, God's good world. We need to understand how it works, how it's designed, how it functions, so that we can also understand when it's broken, how we can be a part of renewing and restoring it the way God would intend through his power, through his insights, his creativity through us. But also we got to think well. And I think that's one of the challenges for many young Christians that we talk to on a regular basis, that they're challenged because it seems like Christianity became anti-intellectual sometime over this last century. And it's had a hard time recovering and being taken seriously. Well, we feel like the Christian faith is serious. It's being taken serious because Christian ideas really have been a part of contributing to so much of the human flourishing that people really do experience in our world today, despite what the press would say about it or despite what people's bias might be about it. And so we need to be confident about that. We need to think well, though. We need to understand how our faith applies to all of life and how it really is good news. And then finally, we need to advance good. We need to be a part of doing good in our cities, our communities, and people's lives around us. That demonstration of faith, in many cases today, is going to speak more volumes than just us sharing our opinion. And that's why we talk about Q as a place to stay curious, think well, and advance good. And today we're going to do that, and we're going to really take a focus on a topic that I think you're going to find encouraging, because it's a topic that's many times just talked about in church circles. But for those of you who maybe aren't in the church world or ministry world, you've heard this term discipleship before. But maybe you think that's kind of churchy stuff. That's the stuff that the pastors sit around and talk about. That's their job. And the reality is discipleship is becoming a word that we're talking a lot more about in the church today. And I couldn't be more excited about it, because it's actually life on life transformation. This discipleship is where we become like Christ. And if we're becoming like Christ, we can count on the fact that if we're living like Jesus, if we're following his ways, if we're trying to be faithful to what we know to be true in the world, then he can use that in amazing ways that you and I could never try to strategically figure out. And so today we're going to hear from Ed Stetzer. He gave a talk at Q. This was a few years back, but it's still completely relevant today, called The Future of Discipleship. Now, Ed Stetzer is a PhD. He holds the Billy Graham Chair of Church Mission and Evangelism at Wheaton College, and he's the Executive Director of the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism. He's planted and revitalized, pastored several churches, and trained pastors and church planters on six continents. He's just very well read, very well respected, somebody who's just been a voice consistently year over year over year on faithfulness, discipleship, evangelism. And so in this talk, you're going to hear some research about discipleship, but you're also going to just hear how we are each called to be a part of discipling. And the reason I think that's important for us is because it's easy to sometimes get consumed with thinking about, in the Q world, I think, what does it mean to engage culture? But if we're not preparing ourselves and the next generation and those around us to be rooted, to understand how they can engage culture, then a lot of these cultural conversations really do fall flat and aren't as important as us knowing what it means to follow the way of Jesus. And so let's listen in to Ed Stetzer on the future of discipleship.
Well,
Well, good day. It's good to be with you. One of the questions you have to ask when you have these kinds of conversations, this person after person coming up telling dramatic stories of gospel impact, is you have to ask the question, what kind of person does this, lives this way, engages for these purposes? And we began this research project, as Gabe said, over a year ago, and we're excited about releasing the data first here exclusively at Q, and then really over the next couple of years, the project is so large, we'll be releasing it here through Q Resources, but also through other places as well, asking the question, well, what does discipleship look like? What's its future, and how do we see changed people become change agents? That's what I want us to talk about for a few minutes, how do changed people become change agents, and what's therefore the future of discipleship? Now, the future is a difficult term because we do a lot of research, but I can't say we can predict the future. We do about 20 research projects a year. This is one of those projects, and I'll actually take a slice of one of those projects. But what I want to talk about is some of the present and how it impacts the future. I can't make great predictions. I'm not a prophet. I'm not the son of a prophet. I actually work at a nonprofit organization. But I do want us to think deeply on what it means and how we might engage and think about, ultimately, the future of discipleship and how that ultimately is lived out in our lives, in our places of work, and in our ministries along the way. Now, I think ultimately if we're going to talk about this intersection of faith and ideas for the common good, much of the theme of what Q does, we have to talk about the kind of Christian that we need. And we recognize that now we're in a season of a discipleship deficit. We have a discipleship deficiency, and we need to move people from being good religious people to instead make disciples living on mission. And I think ultimately we as Christian leaders need to live that. I think the elephant in evangelicalism and even beyond is that we often have a knowledge addiction with an application deficit. And so how do we move from people who are knowledge junkies, who want to learn more obscurities from the Bible, but unengaged in mission, care, and showing the love of Christ to their neighbors? And I'm convinced that the answer to that is found that we might disciple them well and disciple them clearly. Now, why do we know this discipleship deficiency exists? Well, we can look at this from a statistical percentage that of what people answer. We, for example, 47% says someone has poured their lives into them to some degree that they've been discipled. The majority have not. 39% have never discipled anyone else. And overall, 43% have actually done neither. Now, I think as Gabe said just a minute ago, he said this may sound a little old school. Listen, if this is old school, we need to go back to school. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, if we're going to see the kind of stories that we've seen, valued, and treasured here at Q, it's going to be because people have been discipled and developed Christians end up doing Christ-like things. Developed Christians end up doing Christ-like things. And now the challenge is this, is how do you move from good people to actually servants? How do you see that transition takes place in people's lives? Mark Twain once said, the church is where good people stand in front of good people and tell them how to be good people. That ultimately is not what our task is. Instead, our task is so that people might hear the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ, might not turn over a new leaf, but instead might receive new life. And as living an agent of that new life and a citizen of that new kingdom, they might join Jesus' mission in the world and they might live as those who have been discipled. So moving people from seeing the Christian life as behavioral modification, a series of do this and don't do that, but instead to gospel-based living shapes ultimately everything. It's moving people from being good people to servants, and that's primarily about them understanding rightly and clearly the gospel. What Christ has done on the cross for our sin in our place. And not confusing that with our actions and our works. The gospel is not you do. The gospel is Jesus did. But because of what Jesus has done, we have been reconciled so we might become agents of reconciliation. So that leads as an implication of the gospel to practical living. That leads to people determined to lead to transformation. And that ultimately changes everything. That's why we did this research project. We call it transformational discipleship. In the Great Commission, Jesus said, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all I have commanded. For surely I'm with you always, even to the very end of the age. Our desire is that men and women might hear the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. They might be born again by its power, and then they might be taught all that Jesus commands, to live as Jesus lived. In John 20, 21, Jesus says, as the Father has sent me, so send I you. So Jesus has sent us to join him on his mission. And yet too often we see, well, churches developing knowledgeable religious people who are not living as agents of God's mission. And ultimately, we wanted to know why. How might we join Jesus on his mission? And how does that change, well, everything? What we found is some statistical connections, some correlations, and even some predictive factors. Now, I'm going to start talking about some of those things. I'm going to start quoting some statistics with you. Some of you will get all nerded up. Embrace your inner nerd at this moment. There's no reason not to. God is at work in the nerds of the world. And I would say amen to that as the case. But we surveyed over 4,000 Protestants in North America who attended church on some with some consistency. We have a sample of over 1,000 in Canada, more so in the United States, in three languages, English, French, and Spanish. Furthermore, we drew a qualitative analysis of discipleship experts in multiple languages all up and down the Americas so we could understand certain, well, patterns in disciple, robust disciple making. See, there's been much anecdotal and sometimes conversations or convenient samples. Those are not bad, but, you know, surveying a group of churches and say, well, what do you think? But we wanted to, those are good things, but we wanted to go and create something deeper, something more statistically validated, something we could say from a random sample as best we can. What can we know? So this is the largest ever study done of its kind. And like I said, it'll be released over the next couple of years. But I want you to know that we're going to focus on a slice of that study. I'm going to talk about these eight attributes of discipleship that we saw and that were present. But I'm going to focus in really on one of them. These are all the things we'll be releasing in through Q and other places over the next year. But as we look through these connections between the two, I wanted to talk about one of the attributes of serving God and others. Because when we talk about ideas for the common good, we see this interesting correlation between serving God and others with some of the other things that take place. You see, what we found is ultimately that serving impacts growth. Serving, when people begin to serve, it impacts their spiritual growth and their spiritual formation. Because too often we have made discipleship a book when discipleship is actually a life following somebody else. See, there are different kinds of disciples. So discipleship's not a book. It's a life following someone else. For Christians, it's a life following Jesus on and in his mission in the world. So what we found is when people gave positive responses or often responses in or top responses in the other seven areas we talked about, it correlated with serving God and others. Now, this is important because you and I both know that we have a lot of knowledgeable religious people called Christians who are often unengaged in the work of their Christ. But what we find is this. Is when they take spiritual formation seriously, they take service seriously. Now that was news to me. I grew up in a Catholic home outside of New York City on Long Island, and we went to church on Christmas and Easter. I say we grew up Catholic. That's not true. The Catholic Church was the church we didn't go to on Sundays. But I grew up and I saw this disconnect in the lives of the people in my neighborhood, in my Irish Catholic neighborhood, and I thought, well, that must be unique to the place I was. But now I live in the South. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and trying to blend. I'm fixing to fit in. But what I found is the names on the signs have changed, but still I'm surrounded, and we're all surrounded by nominal Christians who use the name but don't actually follow the one that they've named. And so that requires us to understand clearly the proclamation of the gospel, but also to help them to grow in the gospel. And we found that serving impacts their growth in the gospel. Service is both impactful of and impacted by transformational discipleship. So if you want people to grow, don't simply give them a book, take their hand and serve the God you serve with them. And in doing so, growth begins to take place, begins to be real ultimately in their lives and in their journey along the way. These positive scores correlated with one another. Let's take a look specifically at just a few of them. We've heard from the American Bible Society, we've heard from Gabe and others about the importance of Bible engagement. Well, here's what I want you to know. What we found is Bible engagement important because we believe that Christians have a sacred set of scriptures that they read to be changed so that they might understand them deeply. But what we have found also is that they are correlated with serving God and others. In other words, these are not percentages. These are a score on a scale of 1 to 100 that when all scholars were the average, that the average was the same and similar in Bible reading and wasn't actually serving others. But when people began to say, no, I'm engaging, I strongly agree that I am consistently engaging in the scriptures. You know what we found? They were statistically significantly found to be also engaged in serving others. It impacts those along. You want Bible reading? Well, get them serving others, because in serving others in the name of Christ, they understand just how important it is to know and to live the scriptures, obeying God and the dying self. We find a similar numerical correlation between the two, which makes sense. The scriptures tell us in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 that let those who live no longer live for themselves, but for the one who died for them and was raised. When we have ultimately denied ourselves and obeyed God, part of what God sends us to do in the world is to ultimately serve others. And we see the correlation between the two. We see the life change evident there. And we also see it in even sharing Christ. See, now this is a little tricky today in our culture today, because some would desire Christians serving but not sharing. They would like for them to do good but not to tell of the one who calls them to do good. For some, they'd like what has been called a naked public square, where people leave their faith at home or at church. But that's both unhelpful biblically, and though maybe not as important, it's also, well, untenable statistically. What we have found is people who share Christ are people who are more statistically likely to actually serve others in the name of Christ. This ought not to surprise us. Gospel proclamation and gospel demonstration have been tied together in the life of the church and its ministry for a long, long time. And we want to live that. We don't want to separate those two, because biblically we can and statistically we don't. Maybe you've heard the expression credited often to St. Francis of Assisi. It says, preach the gospel at all times. When necessary, use words. The challenge is twofold with the quote. Number one, he never said it. Number two, I would say it's theologically problematic, because he never said it, because it was not, no one quoted him as saying it within 100 years of his death, and scholars have looked at it, and it's been certainly attributed to him later. You know those statistics all the time. The great one by Abraham Lincoln, never trust what people say on the internet. And so you know that these statistics get added to a little bit later on. But also, he was a member of a preaching order. Furthermore, saying to preach the gospel at all times when necessary, use words, is like saying feed the hungry at all times when necessary, use food. The gospel requires both proclamation, and it's through its implication, we live out demonstration. And we see the correlation statistically between the two. Now, we can also reverse that. Just as serving leads to growth, what we found is that growth actually leads to others to serve. We see when people are in the scriptures, they're serving, more likely to be serving others. When people are obeying God and denying self, they're more likely to be ultimately serving others. When people are engaged in sharing Christ, they're more likely to be engaged in serving others. I've heard it, you've heard it. People say to us sometimes, well, can't you just be religious at home and help the poor around you? And the answer is you can't strip out the heart and think the hands will keep moving, because the motivation comes from a disciple people. You can't strip out the heart and expect the hands to keep serving. Listen, for the common good, I want you to hear this. For the common good, our study tells us that for the common good, we need more committed Christians, less committed Christians, and the serving will flow out of their commitment, their growth, and the discipled nature of growing mature believers. Listen, we can't say to Christian people, you can do justice but not preach Jesus. But we also know that you can't preach Jesus and not care about justice. And both of them matter deeply. So the question then has to ask is, well, how does this work? How do people really, really grow? Well, we moved through the quantitative data and looked at some qualitative analysis, and we began to see certain patterns that we could bring together that people, well, when these things came together in what we might call a sweet spot, we began to see robust discipleship taking place. Now, Gabe was kind enough to mention a book I just have out, but this is actually be published in a book this summer, and I'm not the author, but it's based on our research. Eric Geiger and Michael Kelly and Philip Nation have co-authored and collaborated, and it's called Transformational Discipleship, that unpacks some of the qualitative analysis along the way that we've learned of the necessity of truth that undergirds discipleship. When we talk about truth and undergirding discipleship, we talk about things like the clarity of the gospel, about the identity of who we are in Christ, about spiritual disciplines that flow out of that. But we also found it wasn't just truth, it was also posture. a posture of, well, of weakness. Now, we don't like to use that term weakness. Here we are in our nation's capital that speaks through its architecture of strength, that speaks through its layout of power. And yet in the midst of all that, Christians are called to be a humble people who serve others in the name of Christ. So people might learn of the fame of Christ. And that posture is so central to what we learned along this journey in the area of discipleship. Weakness, yes. Interdependence, outward focus, all present and ultimately all real. We talk about truth, we talk about posture, but we also talk about leaders. See, this leader issue is an important and an essential one that we don't want to miss, because I know what many of you may be thinking right now, because you're here because of your, perhaps your deep love for the Lord. You didn't get up this morning and say, you know, I'm not really sure about whether or not the Christian life matters. I think I'll go to the Q conference. No, you're here because of your robust commitment to these issues, your love for the Lord, your love for other people. And so you might be saying at this point, well, good, I am so glad that somebody is finally talking about those bad people who didn't come to the Q conference or aren't as committed as we are. But what I want to say to you is I'm not. Because I think ultimately if we see the church, and I think it's almost trendy today to be almost inappropriately critical of the church. Now, I'm a critic of the church. You can't do statistics like I do and not be critical of the church. Facts are our friends. But at the end of the, and I get the church is supposed to be this beautiful bride of Christ. I've heard that twice just today. This beautiful bride of Christ. I get she's supposed to be this beautiful bride of Christ, and right now she may look like Shrek to you. I get that. But what I want to hear to you is the answer is in a robust, discipled people of God living on mission for God. And what we found is that leaders play an essential and central role in that very thing. I mentioned one research project where we have 4,000 surveys we did. We did another research project, and I want to briefly mention this one as well. It's just how this ties to the area of leaders who are an indispensable quality, and ask the question, so who is needed for this? Because I hope you're not saying, I hope somebody does something about this. But instead, we might recognize just how important leadership is. When we ask people who were in groups that were doing discipleship to rate the qualities of the leaders that led them along the way, when they rated the lower qualities, that we gave them 10 characteristics, when they named 0 to 3 of them, what we found is only 23% said they demonstrated more love in their relationships. When they actually named 8 to 10, 71% said they demonstrated more love in their relationship. Want a more loving church? We have to be more loving leaders. Develop a greater faith for God and God in my life. We see the difference between low and high capacity leaders. We saw start serving others more. We saw the impact. And these are statistically significant differences between, well, leaders who are helping others to grow and to know. This ought not to surprise us biblically. The Bible says, what you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses and trustees, the faithful men will be able to teach others also. That's you. That's me. That means that you and I, that we say, I'm going to be a person who disciples others, who will live as an agent, ultimately, of God's mission. So my question is simple as we close. Have you engaged in that leadership process? A person who is discipled is 7.3 times more likely to disciple another believer. Gabe said it earlier, maybe it's old school. I think we need to go back to school. If we care about ideas for the common good, we must be a part of those who say, then I will entrust to faithful men and women who will be able to lead others also, so that the name and fame of Jesus will be widely known and his kingdom would be advanced in the earth. Thank you for the chance to share with you today.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed listening to Ed Stetz or listening to this talk on the future of discipleship, and that it gave you some insights for your own life, for the way that you're thinking and leading. Maybe if you're leading in a church or you have influence in a church, how your church can be thinking more about this, thinking about what it means to start to play this out in a weekly rhythm and a daily rhythm. And that in general, as just a part of this Q audience, that you're encouraged to be thinking about what does it mean to replicate yourself? What does it mean to duplicate yourself as you're becoming more like Christ? You know, I'm encouraged by the words of Paul when he writes in a letter to the Corinthians. He talks about how you have 10,000 teachers, but no fathers. And I take from that that at that time, you know, we have 10,000 teachers, so many people teaching. I think even of today, we have so many podcasts like this. We have everything in the world, books and things we can read and sermons online and so much access to information. We have 10,000 teachers, but not always a father, somebody who steps in and helps lead us and helps us to understand how we are to be engaging and what we should be aware of. And that's what discipleship looks like. It's like fathering somebody, helping them understand how God's called us to lead in the world. And so as you step out in your relationships, whether it's with family members, with a spouse, with a child, with a friend, consider how you can be a disciple maker wherever God's called you to show up. You can learn much more about Q at qideas.org. I'd encourage you to go there and look around. We have hundreds of talks just like this to encourage you around so many different conversations and subjects, because we really do want you to be curious and think well. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
If you're a pastor or ministry leader in your city and would love to bring Q Ideas thought leaders into your community, leaders like David Brooks.
A lot of things can help in moral revival. The first is exemplars, praising the values of modesty and humility and remembering what they are.
Kara Powell.
We use Instagram and Pinterest to stay in touch with those across the country and world and ignore those sitting across the table.
And Christian rapper Propaganda.
When I stand on my own island and I say I'm the only one that got problems, what it does is it undermines all of our works of justice.
Well, you can. Bring all three to your city on Thursday, October 26th, by hosting a Q Commons event in your community. Q Commons brings the Q learning experience of staying curious, thinking well, and advancing good to cities around the world by teaming up with local partners for a unique evening that combines global talks via broadcast with curated local live presentations. Learn how your organization can be part of bringing this event to your city by visiting qcommons.com. We'll explain how you can do it and how Q Ideas can help you make it possible. Be a part of starting the conversation and advancing good in your community. QCommons.com. Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at MyFaithRadio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.